Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hey there, everybody. How's it going? Well, it's Friday and another weekend. Yay for Fridays, right? It's nice and pretty warm here today, finally. It's a day you can actually get out of the house and go outside and, hang out and all that stuff. It's been pretty rainy and gloomy here last week or two. Really hard to get outside and do anything. And when you did get outside, it was, really cloudy and gray. And, you almost didn't even want to really hang outside because it was kind of a drag almost. Just all the really wacky weather up in here. It was insane. But it's actually finally getting warmer and or got warmer and sunny and at least in a condition where you'd want to hang out and not, have to really decide whether you wanted to hang out, in the house or outside where you, I know most of the week when even it was warm, I stayed indoors because it was just, gloomy and gray out and waiting for it to rain. So it got really crazy over here. So most of the time I still hung out in the house, did work, whereas I had free time to go and you know, go out and do something. I still stayed in the house. So, other than that, still trying to keep up. Excuse me while I bounce around here and try to get comfortable. It's been crazy. I was just reading what you were putting in there about the migration issues between Mexico and Turkey, apparently. Huh. Of course. Oh, well, Turkey's been granted full migration access to entire Europe. Huh. Well, anyway. So, thanks for showing up, guys. Yola and Bill and Azua. I'll call you Oz just for short, since I'm not real sure how to pronounce that. Anyway, well, you know, there's not a whole lot of new types of foreclosure going on. Nothing new. Scandals are scandals, and they've been doing the same scandal since, you know, day one. Typical robo-signature foreclosures. You know, document manufacturing and all that stuff. Now it's just a matter of going through the flow of, you know, the amount of foreclosures that are going to be happening in span sets, with another wave coming through where they're talking another 2-3 million out of California in the next month or so, with 56 million bad loans altogether. You know, it's only expected, I guess. You know, I mean, 56 million bad loans. I couldn't even want to think about the, the value of that 56 million loans that were bogus, which leads me to kind of what I figured I would talk about for a little bit. I scheduled tonight's show as only for an hour because it's Friday. People are out doing their family thing and not wanting to be stuck in the house and so on. So it seems that there's going to be pain in the butt trying to get people into listen to the shows now these days and into the chat rooms and stuff like that. But, you know, for what it's worth, I'm going to actually do a show that sounds like it, you know, like I, instead of winging it like I normally do, like I might have actually planned this. but if anybody, you know, obviously wants to call in, feel free, you know, whatever. Got something to chat about or touch on or ask about while I'm rattling off here, you know, just feel free to drop in. And this is actually kind of what I'm going to go through is what I've kind of already done before. But, you know, I'm just going to kind of sum up a little thing. And it has to do with basically the real parties of interest. So basically, the real parties of interest, you know, they are tied to, or the banks that pertain to be, you know, claim to be the real parties of interest are held by accounting rules, specifically rules governing a sale. Okay, to prevent accounting fraud, various governing bodies created financial accounting standards. Okay, the FAS, basically, financial accounting standards, right? As you know, accounting is a very important area that needs to be regulated tightly to prevent companies from basically cooking the books and doing what they did. Wall Street, more so, FAS 140 was created to govern the sale and securitization of a negotiable instrument, okay? And you can kind of look it up at, you know, FAS 140 and kind of get an idea what that's all about more in detail. One of the things about FAS 140 is a rule governing a sale. A transaction can only be recognized as a sale if it is sold to a party at arm's length. In other words, you cannot sell an asset to yourself. Okay. This is what Enron did to hide their losses And I'm kind of paraphrasing that once an asset is sold, or, well, kind of paraphrasing, that once an asset is sold, the seller forever loses the ability to control the asset. To give an understanding to this point, imagine if I were to sell you a brand new laptop or something. You took the laptop and smashed it into a million bits with a sledgehammer. Because I sold it to you, I have no say whatsoever about what you do with the laptop because it's yours. Okay? This is really important to understand. Once an asset has been sold, the seller forever loses the control of the asset. What it means is, if your lender sold your loan to a REMIC, then they forever lose the ability to enforce control or otherwise foreclose on your property. Put simply, they're no longer the real party of interest. They are just a servicer. Okay, so the REMIC is the real estate investment conduit I've talked about, where they pull and service it in there, and then sometimes what they're supposed to do is use that as a tax relief situation to sell the property or the note to another banking institution without collecting a profit. Now, what they've done is they've even sold it to the REMIC and then still kept selling, duplicating copies and selling it over the stock market. Or they bypass the REMIC and, you know, a lot of cases bypass the REMIC and sell it right to the stock market and start taking a profit. And anything over $10,000 is up to charge up to, well, you know, I'll mention it here again, but there's a charge to it of, you know, a few bucks plus X amount of years in prison. So, you know, I mean, it's really crazy. But, they lose their ability to enforce control or otherwise foreclose on your property. They're no longer the real party of interest. They're just a servicer, though, you know, like I was just saying. Who are the real and beneficial parties of interest? Before I can kind of explain or properly answer the question, you have to kind of hear about tax codes. You see, the real property of interest has to pay taxes on their earnings, and this kind of goes to that REMIC I was just talking about, okay? In other words, if your bank owns your note, they have to pay tax on the interest earned from that note. If a REMIC owns your note, then the REMIC has a tax liability. To avoid the problem of double taxation, banks put these loans into SPVs, special purpose vehicles, okay? Which is kind of wrapped around that REMIC, like I was, you know, talking about. Basically, the special purpose vehicle, the SPV, is their way out for the taxes. Okay. They put these loans into SPVs so that they don't get taxed on them. This is covered under Internal Revenue Code 860. This way, only the shareholders are basically taxed. Okay. So they'll go and flip that note a dozen times or more, and the shareholders are the only ones that are paying taxes on it. So this means only the shareholders are the real parties of interest. Which kind of part of it has to do with some issues with the trustee as well, that are the powers that a trustee has. I've kind of discussed the issues and powers of trustees before, where they can act as a controlling entity to a property for foreclosure and so on and blah blah blah. But that's a whole other topic. Because of the special IRS rule, the trustee is not the real and beneficial party of interest because the REMIC does not own the notes. The shareholders do. Therefore, they cannot enforce the promissory note. With double taxations, corporations have known for years about the taxation, about double taxation. It means at a corporate level, at the end of the year, they take all the revenue and subtract the expenses, what's left of the profits. These profits are then taxed, right? Okay, the corporation also has shareholders. The corporation typically distributes the dividends to their shareholders. Once their shareholders receive their dividends, this is considered to be an income to the shareholders that is taxed. Okay, In other words, profits are taxed twice. So they go through all kinds of means and ways to, you know, beat that. So in other words, they can't have their, basically have their cake and eat it too. They can either accept double taxation and let the RMIC hold the centralized power, or they can distribute the tax liabilities to the shareholders, in which case they have to also distribute the parties of interest. Okay? The bank chose to have a distributed party of interest scheme to avoid paying taxes twice. But now they have a real pickle. If no one entity is a real and beneficiary party of interest, then each and every shareholder of the RMIC is. So then the question is, who has the right to foreclose? Well, the answer is no one. Because even though everybody and the shareholders and everything bought into these trusts and these mortgage asset-backed securities, no one person can be a true owner of the claim ownership of the properties. If thousands of shareholders each own, you know, a tiny part of your promissory loan, you know, none of them can foreclose on the property. Not one of them can prove, you know, liable or, you know, they can't prove actual, you know, ownership or obligation of a note to them from you or anybody else, because they're one of, you know, 15, 20,000 people floating around with a ownership in a stock, or how many ever is in whatever pool, you know. A promissory note is only enforceable in its whole entity. That is the nature of the fraud being perpetrated before America and public and worldwide. Okay. RMIC investors and shareholders, there's a lot of confusion around the there's a lot of confusion around the concept of securities conversion, specifically around the various parties involved, such as the investor and the shareholders. To illustrate the point, I guess, let's say this was actually part that I'm going to pull out of my audit that I used as an example, and it was really cool that I kind of stapled this together, but I had to kind of give some education to a person or details into the RMICs and stuff like that. So basically I had to come up with an analogy to break it down for them. So what we came up with in this little sort of brief strip here, let's say I'm Steve Jobs, okay, in the 70s. I come to you asking for $1,000 to invest in my company called Apple. Part of Apple's asset is the intellectual property and design of the Apple computer. 10 years later, we go public because you were my initial investor. Your initial shares are now worth a lot of money. We then convert your percentage of ownership as an investor into publicly traded stock. Imagine, however, if immediately after I go public, I create another company and assign the intellectual property and design of that Apple computer to its new company. Is that legal? The answer is no. That's commonly known as bait and switch. You cannot register one thing with the SEC and market the stock, and then after the money is transferred, switch out the asset. Okay, so that's kind of what they're doing in this sense. How this regulated, how it relates to a RMIC is there are two pseudo government entities called Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Okay, you all know them. I know you do. Some of you probably have a mortgage through them. Okay, they are actually privately owned companies. Okay, they're privately owned. They're not government. All right. These two giants fund or invest in most of the RMICs created for the purpose of securitization. They are their investors as well, basically. Okay, once the RMIC gets converted into a stock, Freddie and Fannie get very rich because they are the majority shareholders of these publicly traded stocks. When a RMIC is formed, its assets, your loan plus thousands of other people's loans, are declared a permanent fixture to the RMIC. This is like that intellectual. This is like that intellectual property of Apple computer. This is registered with the SEC. It is public information. In other words, once an asset is registered and traded as part of the security, you can't just switch it out because it has become a permanent fixture of the traded asset. The conclusion is you want to take, the conclusion what you want to take away here is that an asset declared in an SEC filing is permanently attached. There's a permanent conversion. This means there's no doubt that your loan promissory note is no more. Okay. So what we can do is take a case of double existence to take a case of double existence. Let's say we have the stock traded on Wall Street that supposedly contains the note. Next, we take the promissory note and we assign it to another bank who takes it and securitizes again. If this situation were to happen, the same loan would be traded twice on Wall Street. In other words, the second set of investors got duped. They bought a lemon. They basically bought a forgery. Okay. This is securities fraud, and it can't happen. Now, I've got another story of this situation. Okay, but we'll just get into that in a minute. Let's talk about I'm going to kind of talk about the repurchase agreement clause and the pooling and service agreement that created the REMIC, basically. There are typical clauses within the pooling and service agreement governing both the submission into as well as the repurchase mortgages. Because it's very important that you understand you got to kind of learn a lot of the terms in defense of foreclosure, terms for foreclosure defense strategies and things like that. So it kind of gets rough trying to break some of these down, but there's not terms and things like that and foreclosure lingo. You got to technically learn, but, you know, as it goes on, you guys will kind of eventually catch on. I mean, some of you already understand some of the stuff. You kind of listen to me rant and rave and do my thing here for a while. When your original lender, or called basically an originator, sells your loan into a REMIC, they are required to deliver your promissory note to the REMIC within 90 days. This means the originator has to endorse the promissory note using the language pay to the order of to a basic whatever party. They have to physically deliver your note to the REMIC. Okay. State law requires that they also record this delivery in their county recorder's office. In 99% of the time, all three things were never done. This leads to a defect in the chain of title. And is a big issue with banks because they have to have a perfected chain of title to foreclose. Okay? So, I mean, without that, they're just messed up, you know? Little part here I'd like to kind of chat about the repurchase of the promissory note out of the REMIC, because this is fraud too. There's no clause in any pooling and service agreement that I've been able to find, really, that governs the event of default that gives the servicer the right to repurchase the note in default. Okay, so that's basically goes back to the term short, you know, selling the house shorter than arm's length. Okay. So there's no law that governs an event of default that gives the servicer the right to repurchase the note in default. This is because this event is governed by FAS 140. In other words, the lender or the servicer cannot just repurchase your loan out of the REMIC. Remember, the sale has to be done to an arm's length third party. And if you sell something, you can't buy it back. The only time you can take it back is if it was defective. So so let's talk about what a basic typical pooling service agreement says about defective repurchasing mortgages. If an instrument is found to be defective, meaning it did not fulfill the above three required steps, the originator is required to buy the note back at full face value. If I sold you a computer for $1,000 and you take it home, turn it on, and nothing happens, then it can be proven that I sold you a defective product, basically, and you're entitled to your $1,000 back. If after 4 years, assuming I gave you a 5-year parts warranty, the computer refuses to boot, you can still come back to me because of the defect and ask for your money back, or I can replace the part. As you know, in the computer industry, a 4-year-old computer is very out of date and is worth only a fraction of the original price, but I still have to give you your money back at full purchase price. But if through no fault of my own your computer broke, then I am not bound to honor the warranty. For example, if you dropped the computer and broke it, that's just plain, you know, bad luck for you, basically. If you then list your broken computer on Craigslist for $20 and I see it, then there's nothing stopping me from buying it back. But I would never buy it, basically, at the original price because, you know, that would be just crazy. In other words, a loan that is in default is never worth as much as good as performing loan. It has to be bought back in its defective status. We can see that if a loan was to go bad, default through no fault of the originator, there's no clause that requires the originator to buy back the loan. We can also see that the originator and servicer does not have to buy back the note at the same price it sold into the REMIC. It's buying the note back as a non-performing asset at best at a substantial account or a substantial discount account. Substantial discount. You know, when they take these notes that they're complaining are bad and trying to buy them back and flip them again, they'll buy them back and try to flip them again to another trust and so on and blah, 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 you know, and bypassing the REMIC and the special purpose vehicles and all that stuff. Now, here's one thing, another great topic that goes into this whole scenario called writing off a bad debt. Let's see how I can break this down. Okay. Basically, the shareholders. Basically, the shareholders and/or the REMIC wrote off the non-performing debt to receive a tax credit. In some cases. There's no specific evidence or law that backs up this argument, just something I like to call sometimes condition precedent. For years, physicists have, you know, postulated that there were things called black holes. Obviously, you know, so everybody knows a black hole. I like to think of it as Wall Street, you know. But no one was able to find one. Okay, you see. A black hole is a collapsed star that is so dense that no light can escape it. I got booted, guys. Sorry about that. Kind of ranting and raving there for a minute. Let's talk about how I can make the claim that the shareholders in the REMIC wrote off the non-performing debt to receive a tax credit. There's no specific evidence or law that backs up this argument. I'm kind of reiterating what I started because I got cut off. Receive a tax credit. There's no specific evidence or law that backs up this agreement. Just assuming that I call the condition precedent. Okay. And the whole fact that, you know, it becomes created the way the scandals and the market issues and things like that became created, it just caused a huge black hole, or black hole. A black hole is a collapsible star that is so dense that no light can escape it. And because we depend on the light to see, no one can actually see a black hole until one day somebody discovered this phenomenon called the event horizon. It is the line in which the gravitational pull of the black hole equals the strength of the light trying to escape from the black hole. Because of the existence of the event horizon, people then concluded that there must be a black hole inside the event horizon. Okay, using this condition precedent, I'm going to try to illustrate why it is in the interest of the Rimmick to write off a debt rather than try to collect it in a foreclosure. Let's say you're a farming supply shop owner and I come to you asking for credit. We've known each other for years. So you say, sure, I used your credit to buy some seeds and fertilizer for my farm. Sadly, we had a flash freeze this year and all my crops died, so I owe you $100, but I can't pay you and go out of business. As a business owner, you can do one of two things: carry the debt as an asset, assign it to a third party through endorsement, write it off as a loss, and then sell it off to a debt collector. That's it. So let's kind of go through, I guess, a couple of the cases. If you carry the debt as an asset, then you do not get tax credits for the loss. My purchases of seeds still count as revenue for the purposes of taxes, i.e. you are taxed on money you did not receive. If you sign to a third-party endorsement, then I will owe the money to that third party. The requirement is that I signed a promissory note and you physically endorse the note to the other party. In this instance, the debt between you and I are settled. I now owe the third party. You cannot write off the loss as a tax write-off. If you write the debt off as a loss, then you not only do you not count my purchase as revenue, but the loss you suffered through the bad debt is offsetted against their income. As we basically mentioned earlier, the Rimmick cannot foreclose because real parties of interest are the shareholders. So in order for them to realize any benefit from a non-performing note is to sell it to another party in full so that party may be able to collect, foreclose on the debt, basically. The Rimmick can either sell it as a perfect debt or a written-off debt. A perfect debt is one that the Rimmick and the shareholders do not receive any tax credit. When the Rimmick sells the perfect but non-performing debt, it will only receive pennies on the dollar, as our previous example with the faulty computer that I'd mentioned. The Rimmick can still sell the debt as a written-off debt, receive tax credit for the sale, and receive money from the buyer of the non-performing note for pennies on the dollar. If it were you, what would you do? Either way, you're receiving pennies on the dollar, i.e. about the same amount. Might as well get the tax credit for it, right? I would. That's why I believe shareholders and Rimmick are writing off the debt. And they're writing off the debt, using these backhanded tactics. Which is really messed up because, it gets into IRS fraud and all that stuff. Well, the thing is with the tax, the Rimmick and the special purpose vehicles, see a note by law and a security can't exist at the same time. And, it gets really hairy because they're collecting an additional profit when they're not supposed to outside the special purpose vehicle. So it gets crazy. But we have a caller here, so let's see who it is. Hello.
Hello, it's Linda here in California.
Hey, girly, how you doing?
Hanging in there. Stuck in traffic because we're all headed down to see Ron Paul.
I don't want to hear it. Don't even. Yeah.
Anyway, it looks like they're coming from Long Beach. I've seen a couple Ron Paul stickers on the bumpers. If this is any indication of the crowd he's drawn, it's going to be huge.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God! I know it's 5:30 Friday night on I-5 South, so that's always a pain. But man, I think they're coming from every city in San Diego County, so it's going to be wild. I've got my camera, and what I'll do is I'll try to get an assessment as to how many people showed up and stuff, and do a blog sometime tomorrow or Sunday.
Yeah, do one thing. It's going to play really important because you know how media is. Because they'll show pictures of it and make it look like he had 15 people show up. So take as many audience shots, like surrounding area shots, because, you know, they're always showing pictures of him. Now, I've actually seen legitimate pictures that people took that went to him, and they would show, you know, theirs versus what the media put out at the same event. And the one guy on my, one of the guys, Steve, on my Facebook page, went to a couple of states, and he his picture showed, like, you know, on the minimum low end, you know, bad days of like 2,000 or 3,000, 5,000.
Right.
Know? And great days where he filled almost half a stadium, you know.
It's amazing. So, I mean, we've got a lot of people in our conservative groups down here who love Ron Paul. And San Diego County's got about 3 million people total in all the, you know, from start to finish. And it's going to be wild, so.
Oh, it's definitely going to be a party, man. I'm kind of jealous. Like I said before, I was when Ron came to Illinois, I was going to go out of my way in hell and high water to get down to Central Illinois where he was at.
Right.
But I didn't know he was there until the day after because they didn't make it known. They just then suddenly the next day, oh, yeah, Ron Paul was in town yesterday.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't find anything on UCSD's site, so I was fortunate enough to get it from Vista Tea Party Patriots and from my task force. They sent the links, and it was the event was done through Eventbrite, and I was sponsoring it. But anyway, we're excited. So, yeah, I'll have a full report this weekend once I get down here. And I'm hoping I've got about 25 minutes before we're supposed to start our early seating, and I have my – it's a free event, but I have a pre-printed ticket. I'm hoping everything will be cool.
Yeah, that'll – that'll be that's very cool. I know
everybody's jealous, but
it's almost like, you know, the crap they go through to bury him and hide him in the first place.
Oh,
and then
ridiculous.
If you get lucky enough to hear where he's gonna be, you know, I had almost said like 2 weeks ago when, or a few weeks ago, it was like last week or the week before when you made the announcement you had the ticket. If I didn't have this last-minute situation pop up with a financial issue, I would have flown over there this week to hang with you and go.
Fantastic. Okay, well,
was ready. I was really ready. I was pondering it all night. I was thinking, man, I got to see this guy at least. If he didn't make it for president, I want to at least say I seen him during his running campaign and say I met the man somehow because I was, or did something.
I know. Because, I'm telling you. You know what the media has done and these Congress people have done, and, you know, everybody and the people who were running, like Bachman and Santorum and the rest of them, and they're all fawning over Mitt Romney. I could just throw up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And every single talking head, I mean, you get like maybe once a week somebody will actually mention Ron Paul's name. It just makes me – I've never seen anything like this. I mean, and I know Ron Golden's probably tearing his hair out half the time too. Because he knows what's going on firsthand, but unbelievable. So I'm going to try to get off here and let you do your show, and God bless, and I'm going to make sure I get as many pictures as I can.
Right on. I'm looking forward to seeing them.
Okay, thanks so much. All right, Brian.
Yeah.
God bless everybody.
You too. Wow, that was great to hear from her. Man, that just drives me nuts, you know, hearing – I'm getting to go there and see good old Ron. Like I mentioned, the stuff they went through and did to bury the fact that he was even here in Illinois is just, you know, it makes me sick to figure that, you know, he I don't know. You know, I get so frustrated I can't even put words to it. You know, like I get stuck in sometimes during these shows while I'm preaching my thing. Because I get so mad and frustrated, and then it makes it hard for me to even say anything. But when earlier on when I mentioned the banks foreclosing or doing a foreclosure, but when the banks were basically if somebody refinanced and both banks that had dealings with an individual's for individual's mortgage had securitized the note, that it's, you know, highly illegal. Well, it just so happens, ironically, that I'm doing a client who we had looked into where actually they didn't even refinance, I don't think. I don't think it was a refinance. I think it was the note was actually, if I remember correctly, the note wasn't refinanced. The note was transferred to another bank, bought out by whatever, bought out by another bank. One sold it to another. Okay. And they used that SPV to do it, that special purpose vehicle attached to the REMIC that allowed them to do the tax evasion, I like to call it. By the way, which eventually leads to racketeering, RICO charges, great stuff. Basically, the two lenders did it. Both the banks securitized the loan. So it was stuck in two different assets, just stuck in two different trusts, which is highly super illegal. Way, way, way super illegal. That means they've committed two trusts, or they've made two trusts, creating two securities in the same note. So now there's supposedly two securities in one note, or two securities and possibly two notes. Because if this third guy, the second guy, tries to reflip the note to another mortgage officer or mortgage company in between now and whenever, you know, it gets crazy, you know, and that's securities fraud. That's huge. By the way, which in that special purpose vehicle where I mentioned they're not allowed to collect any form of interest in the transferring process between bank and bank when one bank will buy a note from another bank at what the remaining debt value of the note is. So if you bought a house for $200,000, you paid $180,000 off, the other bank can only buy it for the $180,000 without, you know, anything going over that amount, because then you've collected a profit and then you have to pay for that profit, the taxes on that profit. So basically, it leads to all kinds of racketeering charges, RICO statute, you know, violations and things like that. Well, banks can't do that. But anyway, the one client has two banks that securitize the note, which is super, super duper illegal. That means there's just a couple of there's two securities and one note is being passed around. And even under that rule, they can't do it. There's $1 million charge for every tax evasion violation. So anything over $10,000, they have they've committed tax evasion against. For every if they get charged for tax evasion at all, it's $1 million per charge plus up to 25 years in prison. If there's more than so many offenses committed, then it goes to $2 million per charge or $2.5 million per charge and 35 years in prison and or both. So there should be some people going to jail, kind of like that whole savings and loan days thing. And they should be getting some people locked up here soon. But I think the way the New World Order is going and all that other fun and fuzzy stuff, that probably won't happen too soon. So, yeah. So, I don't know. You know, they're going to get away with it probably. You know, walk away scot-free. A few million dollars in their pockets, and all these bankers in their fat pockets, while everybody else is suffering. I'm trying to figure out where they're going to live. You know? So, it's crazy. But anyway, and it's funny that Kim actually, or not Kim, but Lyndon called in because, like I mentioned, California is under another wave of foreclosures coming through to about 1.5 million, 2 million or more. By the end of the year, not including the rest of the continental U.S. I mean, they won't have really that many, probably a few hundred thousand throughout California. But I'm talking, when I say 3 or 4 million, 3 or 4 million throughout the states, you know, by the end of the year. And remember, there's 56 million bad or 56 million securitized loans that happened in that short period between 06 and, you know, 2011. Okay, so, you know, it's just a miracle that we're only getting 3 or 4 million, 5, 6 million a year in foreclosures at that rate. But I think that's because the courts are so docked up, so backed up. But I was watching a show online, or a video clip online, where in Florida, the judge, they take 2 or 3 hours a day. And because nobody shows up to stand up and fight for their house, they foreclose on properties at a house per minute average. So they'll run through, you know, probably 45, 50 plus foreclosure processes in an hour, because nobody shows up. And that's, you know, where we come in and trying to make announcements and yell to everybody and say, hey, you know what, don't leave your house. Stay in the house. Don't leave it. Fight for what's yours. And just show up to your court dates, you know. Don't, you know, don't abandon the house, you know. And there are actually, people are making accusations that the court houses down there in Florida, are actually even committing acts of fraud in some sense, because, you know, the way they're running these fast-paced foreclosure processes, they just seem to be out of hand, kind of. But the one judge, you know, they interviewed had stated, you know, well, look, you know, we serve them the papers to show up and they don't show up. So what can we do? It's out of our hands. So they're assumed abandoned properties or parties that are no longer interested in trying to save their, you know, they're in default. Automatic assumption of default by that time, when they don't show up to the property to fight for it. So it's real important that you stay and club it, you know, slug it out for what's yours. And, you know, don't leave it. Whatever you do, just keep your butt in the house, you know. Don't, you know, give up on it, no matter what, even if it seems hopeless. You know, get online and educate yourselves, and you know, get on the YouTube. There's all kinds of videos about foreclosure and showing the note, things like that. So, you know, there's just all kinds of goofy little tricks of the trade that you can learn fast, just to go in and put a damper on the situation. You know, I mean, in some cases, just showing up on the first day will get you an additional year because they're so backed up in foreclosure processes. Just say, you know, something to the effect you're trying to work on it with the lender, and, you know, they'll put you out 6, 8, 9 months, you know, before you have to come back again just to get through the second process, you know. So it's really crazy in what you can do. So anyway, I'm going to run through the radio program list and kind of belt out what's the weekly schedule here for everybody. So they know who's doing what and where and times and all that fun fuzzy stuff, because it's what we do and how we do it. And I guess Bill left. No. Anyway, so Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time is Fed Up Frank with Frank Winkle, which I miss. I wonder what the heck's happened with him. I tried calling him. I lost his number. No, his number changed or he dropped his phone. You know, his cell phone's off or something. So I couldn't. I tried calling him to see how he was, but his phone didn't work. So I don't know, whatever. So I lost track of Frank. But anyway, it's Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time with Fed Up Frank Winkle, which is being handled by Ron Golden now as a fill-in until further notice. And then Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time is Constitution Hour with Ron Golden. And Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time is Patriot Family Chat with Hollis Buchanan and Bill Strong. Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, Right from the Left Coast with Linda Sills. Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, Patriot Education with Terry Rowland. And then Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern is Foreclosure Help with yours truly, Brian Williams and Ken Bennett. And Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Exposing the Illusion with Magic Mike. So that's our list of, you know, what's happening. So, other than that, I don't imagine any of you guys in the chat room there are in foreclosure. So, I got only 8 minutes left, and not really a whole lot more to chat about, just other than huge amounts of foreclosure all over the place. Huge amounts of it. Really? Wow. Michael's sick now? Wow. Well, that's bogus. That's bad. Poor Mike's sick. Well, anyhow, I'm going to go ahead and kind of, I guess, he's taking a break. Yeah, I understand. I hear that. Yeah, I can understand him taking a break. I mean, he's got a lot of on his mind, things he's going through, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I'm sure it's driving him nuts. A lot of things on his mind and him having his seizures on an occasional off-on basis or semi-regular basis, the poor guy. So it's going to be rough. You know, I can almost foresee weekends kind of being in a halt for a while because it's really hard to get anybody and, you know, on a Friday, especially a Saturday for sure. So that's a whole other topic later. But anyway, so there's only 6 minutes left. So I'm going to wrap it up, guys. I'm going to call it an evening, get my things rolling here. I'm going to go see a friend's band and kind of get out for the night, get out of the house a little bit since I don't get to really do that a whole lot. Just for something to do because I want to do. So, anyway, all is well, and thanks for everybody dropping in. And, you know, coming in and hanging out. Unless one of you guys want to call in and chat for 6 minutes. I've got all kinds of free time technically. But other than that, you know, I'm going to run. Kind of go hang out and do my thing. It's Friday. So I'm going to go get my groove on, like I said. And, Bill's having bad weather. Yeah. Yeah, we're all getting smacked around a little bit. So anyway, alrighty guys, take it easy. And I will see you all next weekend. Thanks a lot. Thanks for tuning in.